This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz. This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zanga at the table with Barry and Mariana. Wow, we've had a look at the new, no, sorry, it can't be the new website for NZB. It's reverted back. Obviously, there's been a couple of teething issues, and I thought, right, well, we better take it off and fix it.
We're back to the old site, which is working okay.
Yeah. So a couple of top things that they are talking about on the homepage of NZB is the man that came up with Compass is in the country. Nice little write-up there from Richard Solomon. Have you met Bob before?
I have met Bob. In fact, he's been to my house.
Really? How cool's that?
He has, yeah. You wouldn't ever meet a nicer guy than Bob. And he really has a passion for his scoring program, Compass.
Yeah.
A lot of clubs in the Waikato Bays use it.
Yeah. The other thing on the homepage was National Congress 2025. The entries are now open, Barry. Have you rushed on in and entered?
Well, I haven't yet. I don't know. Have you been in there and entered?
No, not yet. I did have a look at the breakdown and the costings. It was like, it's almost $600 to go and play for the whole week.
Can we remember what it cost last year? Not that that's relevant, I suppose. I think a lot of us sort of thought there would be a bit of cost saving by going to Palmy, but doesn't look like it's worked out that way. I mean, I know everything's going up.
Yeah.
Seemed a bit steep. Now, where was the bit that you read about the total cost for, you know, an intermediate or a junior or whatever? Where did you read that bit?
It was under National Congress, and then it's got 2025 NZB Congress fees. So if you're an open player, you're looking at $598. Restricted open, $555. Intermediates, $480. And juniors for the full week is the same, $480. Yep. I know it's a lot of bridge. I don't think I remember saying, oh, that's almost $600 last year.
Yeah, I don't recall. But anyway, you know, they really need people to attend this. So hopefully that's not going to put people off.
There is a couple of things. You know, it's $399 to enter into the open teams, which actually includes the entry to Swiss Pairs and Congress teams. So it's sort of absorbing everything. So really, the payment is for the New Zealand Open teams, and then you go into the Swiss Pairs and the Congress teams, and then $199 for the New Zealand Open Pairs.
Oh, yeah. Interesting, by the way, they're going to actually start with the teams this year. Did you notice that?
Yeah, how cool is that?
Summary events and timetable. So first thing, Saturday, 10 o'clock in the morning, 8th of November, straight into the New Zealand Open teams qualifying.
Oh, that's quite good. That means the bulk of the people will be there on day one.
Yeah, I guess so, because most people play in one or other of either the open teams, the restricted teams, the intermediate teams, or the junior teams. When does the pair start? It doesn't start
until... It looks like it's well down.
Thursday. It doesn't start until Thursday.
Yeah, because we did always used to report back on the Monday night, remember, when we were recording, and we used to have the results of the open pairs by the Monday night.
So this year we'll have, well, we'll know the semi-finalists of the teams by Monday night. The final starts Tuesday afternoon, so we might be able to talk about the final. So there's no particular reason why the pairs had to be first, other than it always was, and that's not really a good enough reason.
I think it'll be about capturing market.
So people will be staying, and of course the pairs starts on Thursday. The final of the pairs will be held on, it doesn't sort of quite add up, on the Friday and the Saturday, is it? I'm just looking.
Yeah.
New Zealand Open Pairs semi-final, that's going to be held on the Friday. I just actually can't see where it's got the final of the New Zealand Pairs, but if they're having the semi-final on the Friday, I guess the final will have to be on the Saturday. New Zealand Open Pairs qualifying, that's on the Thursday.
Yeah.
A couple of sessions there. And it's the New Zealand Open Pairs semi-final on the Friday, 9:30 a.m. and 1:30 p.m.
But since we don't play in the evening, it has to be done on Saturday.
I guess that's right. We'll have to get Bridget on the show and she can just tidy a few things up for us.
That sounds like a plan.
When you say there's no evening play, of course, The rubber bridge players, they're used to burning the midnight oil. They're all on at 7:30 p.m. on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
See, there's a goulash session this time, Monday afternoon.
So anyway, you're in Dunedin still?
Yep.
Live and exclusive on the Bridge Zone from Dunedin?
Yeah.
So you didn't sneak up to Timaru on the weekend at all, did you?
No, I never made it. I didn't even make it down to the bloody Otago club or even the Tairi Bridge Club this year. I was just a little bit busy.
But you haven't seen a card for weeks.
Bit sad, isn't
So
it?
the South Canterbury Congress was on. Open pairs, this is a pretty popular win. Max Morrison and Tony Quinlivan. And they won it quite comfortably by about 6%. From Graham Tufnell and Jan Alabaster. 12 tables in the pairs, 14 tables in the teams. Don't know how good my memory is or yours, but those numbers seem to be a bit down on unusual, what do you think? Anyway, in the teams, that was won by the Grant team, Alan Grant, John Skipper, Jane Lennon, David Taylor. Second was the Johnston team, Brad Johnston, Glenn Coutts, Sam Coutts, and Matthew McManus. And no sign of Mariana Cullen's name. She didn't even enter the premises.
Hey, you know, last week we were talking about the numbers with Judge Julie about the distribution between intermediate, junior, and open. We had some feedback from what was happening in Hamilton Club.
I saw
The
that. What were
dist
the numbers in there?
50% is junior grade, 32% intermediate, and 18% at Hamilton are open players. Similar. The junior rank is the one that's top of that at 50% of the club members are junior at Hamilton.
Funny you should mention that because we haven't actually discussed this, guys. I was curious about this, so I contacted Alistair Stuck, who is always extremely helpful, and he got back to me pretty quickly. What actually are the percentages of junior players, intermediate players, and open players? And I got the exact numbers. He actually gave me the exact numbers of
Okay,
what they
well,
worked out.
share.
So the percentages work out at 55%. Junior players, which was nowhere near as high as you would have thought, 36% of intermediate players and 9% open players.
Wow.
Yeah, so he said there's a total of 12,298 members, New Zealand bridge players. Of those, 6,788 juniors, 4,388 intermediates, and 1,082 open players.
Amazing.
Yeah, that was good information from Alistair.
What's happening at your club, listeners? If you've got some time to check it out, because it does look like we are swamped at the bottom end. Do they have a breakdown of the members playing in tournaments out of those percentages, Barry? Is that something that they could collate?
I don't know whether they do have that information. I mean, hey, the numbers that Judge Julie was quoting, I know they weren't exact, but at that stage, there were a lot more juniors. Then I think the way they've changed the gradings has actually evened things up quite a lot. I mean, she was talking 80, 15, and 5, and here we are at 55, 36, and 9. So they are, they are a lot better than they were. Even if, and of course, I think of those open players, a lot of them are tournament players, and of those junior players, not many of them are. When we look at our junior tournaments, we have, we're struggling. Like Cambridge had a junior pairs event on the weekend, and they even combined them with the novices, and they had 12 tables. I mean, we don't have that many junior tournaments. Part of the reason being is they're not very well patronised.
Well, yeah. Hamilton had the intermediate junior, and how many tables were in the junior tournament? It was only about 10, wasn't it? Something like that.
So, yeah, the Hamilton Intermediate and Junior was held, well, only a week or so ago. And so the intermediate pairs, 22 tables in
Yeah,
the
they had over
intermediates.
20, but the juniors, I think, were about half.
Yeah, they weren't even half. There were only 10 tables.
Yeah.
So there you go. I mean, the junior players outnumbering the intermediate players, but when it comes to entering a tournament, way more intermediates playing than there are juniors. Pick the
Yeah.
bones out of that. I don't know how you work it all out. And when we have open tournaments, they seem to be quite well patronized, even though there's only 1,082 open players. Of course, you realize that anybody can play in an open tournament, and a lot of people do. So there'll be intermediates and juniors. I think I've mentioned it before, but we went to the Papatoa Christmas tournament. It was a 5A tournament because it was their local club tournament. A lot of people from Papatoa Club were playing, including people that had only just come through the lessons that year. It's good to see, I think, and it's good for people to do that.
Come on, you juniors. You've got all the numbers there. Time to vote with your feet. Just walk on in. If you think it's scary, it's not really. It's just like playing a club session, except you have lunch and then you go back and do it all again.
I guess everybody was like this when you first played in a tournament. I mean, we're only all used to playing one session of bridge, aren't we? Going along, playing a session of bridge, going home, that's it. But then to have lunch and go back in and play another session, by the time you get to the end of it, you're absolutely shattered. It's quite hard going the first time. Hey, what's the worst that can happen?
True. Play the cards, bid what's in your hand, and then meet a whole lot of other people. Next thing you know, you've entered another one again.
I think that's one of the big benefits is you meet a lot of people from all over the place, not just your own club members. And of course, you will have some of your own club members will be around probably as well. So there'll be people there, you know. It's not too scary.
Get a carful, rock on up, take a table to the tournament, and have a really good conversation on the way home about what you could have done. And what you actually did do makes it quite hilarious sometimes.
I'll probably get told off for this at the Cambridge Junior Pairs on the weekend. The top four pairs home were all from Hamilton. Just saying.
Good read, wasn't it? Four of those people came out from my lessons, so that was pretty nice
Okay.
to see.
Speaking of reading, I mentioned the bridge book that's out, written by somebody from the Hamilton Club, Lethal Finesse. So it is out, available on Amazon, and paperback copies available as well now.
Oh,
You can buy it
cool.
online. Talks about bridge in the area and quite a good read.
Check it out. Let us know what you think of it. I might get myself one. Could be my book. Look, I tell you what, this improving your bridge with Adam Parrish. I haven't done much of that over the last 2 weeks since I've been down in Dunedin. Do I have to get a note from my mother? I've been absent.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, know when to
Have you
run.
got a tip for me, Barry?
I have, and it seems like a very basic one, but it's one that I just keep on noticing people not do. If your partner opens a suit at the one level and you've got six or more points, you need to bid something. If you haven't got a suit to bid at the one level and you've only got six or seven or 8 points, well, then bid one no trump. It doesn't promise a balanced hand. It just says, I don't have anything. I can't support you, partner. I don't have another suit to bid at the one level. That tells partner quite a lot. You can't bid at the two level just because you've got a six count with six clubs. You just haven't got enough points for it. Partner opens the bidding. You've got six or more points. Bid something. I would have thought that was obvious, but I've just seen a whole lot of people that aren't doing it.
6 to 9 points. You've always said you have to review your hand. What happens if you've got a six card suit and you've only got 5 points, Barry? Are you responding or are you passing?
If I could respond in that suit at the one level, I'm definitely bidding. I was reading just recently, Gao Tisleval, who played for New Zealand for Yonkers, he made the comment that nobody ever passes an opening bid these days. In other words, people are bidding with less and less in response to partners' opening bid. So while I said you should bid when you've got six, I mean, if you've got a decent five or maybe even a chunky four, you want to think about responding.
Here we go. When does a four look great? Next minute,
Well, you know,
you're looking at a three.
would you say that I'm a glass half full sort of person, or would you say I've got rose-tinted glasses? Which of those two?
Wow. I don't know,
Something good
because
might happen.
you sort of ignore if you've got bugger all. A six card suit, I think length says something, don't you?
I just think even if you've got a decent five-card major and you can bid it at the one level, you really want to bid it. And if you're a point short, wow, you're not really going to let that stop you, are you?
Fingers and toes are crossed and hope partner doesn't go leaping away into game or something.
Maybe game will make. Points is only a guide. If you've got a good five card suit, partner's got enough to bid game, it's probably going to make.
Hear ye, the coach.
Sensation. The cold sensation. Now, here come the judge. Here come.
Good morning, Judge Dooley.
Hi.
Big week next week for me, but Barry's got a question first.
Okay.
Yeah, the Hamilton Bridge Club's all excited. They've got Judge Dooley coming down to direct their restricted tournament on Sunday, and they've got the bailiff playing, but I'm sure they're more excited about the director than they are about the bailiff.
Probably excited about what trouble the bailiff can cause the judge.
Yes. Might have something up his sleeve.
Who knows?
Now, we had a bit of a glitch with the NZ Bridge website changing over. And my question this week is related to that, because there were some entries when they switched back to the old one, they disappeared off the NZ Bridge website.
Yep.
There were maybe three tables. Now, we hope that we've got them all and they're all entered. I think we've got, as I say, 17 and a half tables. If another table turns up out of thin air that we didn't know about, what can we do about that, and can you be prepared for it?
So one of the things that we do is we have a standby pair. And I know there's a variety of things that happen with clubs because they want to get lots of entries. So they ask a lot of their players to enter. But on the other hand, if we have a standby pair, then we can deal with any odd number so there is no phantom. And in general, Christchurch and Auckland, you don't pay. I don't know Waikato. If you're a standby, then you don't pay an entry fee. You get a free game if you play.
Yep.
All right? Because you're giving up your time and you don't know what's going to happen. So it means that if somebody doesn't arrive because they're sick, or extra people arrive because they forgot to enter, then subject to room, I mean, sometimes clubs run out of room. And sometimes some of the formats get a bit difficult with boards, but you can always take care of extra people arriving. So we'd like everyone to check to see that their entry is actually on the website. It would be really wonderful and yes. helpful. But at the end of the day, in the last minute, coming into the tournament starting, we have people that get sick, people that have forgotten to enter. So having a standby pair available just means that there's no issue around the tournament starting. It's just a bit of rearranging very quickly on the morning.
Okay.
And we're a bit of a grumpy director sometimes.
And if it's a full table, or perish the thought, a full two tables. The standby pair won't be required, obviously. But
that's right, and the format might change. And I know because I don't use Compass that I'll be asking Anne a few questions about how we cope with the different numbers. All the scoring programs are able to cope with basic numbers.
Yep. Okay.
So there might be a problem.
Okay. One thing about Hamilton Bridge Club is we're not going to run out of room, even if we get another couple of tables. Yeah. So at worst, we'll use two rooms.
It's just being prepared. And I mean, Mariana asked the other week about how we seed things.
Yeah.
And that might throw things out a wee bit, but not enough to really cause any great anxiety. And I note that you've got a pretty good field in some ways arriving, though the pairs are pairs I haven't seen together before in a lot of cases. So it will definitely be interesting.
Yeah.
Can you let us in on a little secret? Because I reckon most of our listeners would want to know this. Are you going to reveal what seeding you've given to the bailiff?
Oh, there you go. There's a question, isn't it, hey? I don't know. I mean, am I going to reveal the seeding I give to, I don't know, Barry?
I'm not there. I'm doing open house. But I think the bailiff in particular, that we'd all like to know what his seeding was.
But, she could just say top two, top three, top five.
You could say bottom half.
Because entries change frequently between now and the weekend, and I noticed that the entries close on Friday night at midnight or 11 p.m. So between now and then, lots of things change. So I'm not even looking at the list at the moment. I do know we've got 17 and a half tables, and I'm hoping that we'll have 18. You know, that's about all there is at the moment.
With 18, is it a good number? An easy number to do, because isn't anything over 13 is the magic number?
No. I'm not certain what Compass does, so I've got to have a talk to Anne about what I can do with those numbers. In general, it's about coming along and having a competitive day that everyone enjoys. So the format will be, it's whether it chooses to be two or three boards a table is about where I'm at the moment with the format. And that's generally about all there is I need to worry about.
Okay.
I reckon between now and Friday night, one thing's not going to change, and that'll be the bailiff. He'll still be just the same. Are you going to ask a question, Mariana?
I officially go on the directors roster next week, Jules.
Oh, right.
And so I'm doing a Tuesday afternoon session.
Yep.
And one of the things that I can't quite get in my head is about the lead out of turn. I
Okay.
know what the lead out of turn is. You quite often say, "Can you give me a call back when they get back on lead?" What does that relate to?
Okay. Well, good luck. The bread and butter, it's like formats and things. The thing about directing is people moving around the room and enjoying themselves. So a lot of it is about being the person that makes them welcome. And generally, that's what clubs want you to be rather than grumpy, strangely enough. The bread and butter laws are really useful to understand. So the lead out of turn is one of those ones where that you get a huge number of options thrown at you when you're sitting at the table. Most of those options come down to basically the same options that you have with a penalty card. So if someone leads out of turn, opening lead out of turn, then the declarer can accept that lead. Dummy can go down immediately. And then after they've seen dummy, they can play to the trick. Declarer can accept the lead and they can let their partner play the hand. And that's the weird one because nearly everyone goes, "Oh, yes, my partner can play." Whereas I don't think I'd ever agree to
No, she wouldn't. She wouldn't.
I love playing the hand.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. So then if the clearer doesn't accept either of those first two options, the lead reverts back to the person who should have made the opening lead. So now we have the opening lead that was deliberately played, presumably face up, because if it's face down, we don't actually have an issue here. They just retract it. So I'll get back to that bit there. The lead's face up. So now declarer can demand the lead of that suit. If they demand it, it is once, all right? It is because that when you make an opening lead, your partner can encourage or discourage that lead immediately. So you get information from the card they played about what you do next, all right? They can forbid the lead of the suit. And if you forbid the lead of the suit, then for as long as the opening leader has the lead that time, they cannot lead that suit. And again, it is because whilst you can make an opening lead and find out whether your partner likes the lead that you made or not, they can't normally indicate to you exactly what other suit they want. All right. When you forbid the lead, it's for as long as the lead is retained at that point. Or you can have them lead what they like. Okay. But if they lead what they like, they're entitled to know that their partner has to play whatever the card is that's on the table. Now, penalty cards are the same. So if you say you don't care, or someone's revoked and then corrected it and they've got a penalty card, all the same thing, the director's going to say at some point, "Call me back when the partner's on lead," because all of these lead options apply. But in the meantime, when you're directing, you like to stay and watch and make sure that it all goes well, but very often you get called away. Now, if I say I don't care about what the lead is, if I say my partner's got a penalty card and I say, "Lead what you like, I don't care," and the person needs the ace of a different suit and they're still on lead, I get all those options again. All right.
I
Don't
see.
just get to choose for that once and say, "I don't care," and that's the end of the story. If you don't care, every time the partner of the person with the card in front of them is on lead, the clearer gets to exercise those options. Even if it's the next trick, they get to exercise those options.
Oh,
That
again.
is why it's really important that the director comes back. Okay. If things go wrong and you haven't bothered to call the director back, there won't be much sympathy for you wanting to change your mind about what did or didn't happen. And as I said, we go because we're needed somewhere else. We would really like to stay and make sure that card is gone. And it is one of the annoying things because when you're directing, people know that you're there. And in some cases, they're feeling a bit intimidated because you're standing there. So you've got to try and pretend you're not there, but you do need to be there to make sure things go well. So you are.
There you go, Mariana. Obviously, discretion is part of being a good director.
Yeah. And Patrick was saying, "I don't know why you would always say, lead what you want and don't pick it up."
Well, there's two theories here. One is that if someone is so keen to make the lead that they've made out of turn, and you don't want to accept it because they really want to lead it. The other one is if they are so tired they don't even realise who's on lead, then perhaps you do want to accept it. So there's two very opposing theories on this one. At the end of the day, and this is to be really clear, no matter what, if people make an error, if they do something wrong, you're not taking advantage of someone because they made a mistake. You are just getting things on track to where they should be for you. So saying it doesn't matter and then feeling really upset later when things go south is really your own fault, because if someone has done something wrong, you should be calling the director. And all of you who are looking to see how Mariana does on her first day of directing, call her.
Yeah, I'll probably get there and no one calls. And I say, oh, that was a letdown.
So you're actually going to be directing next Tuesday, are you, Mariana?
Yeah. Yep.
Tuesday night or Tuesday morning? Tuesday afternoon?
Afternoon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you playing, are you, Barry?
Well, actually, I'm not, but I am actually stubbing for one of those. Not that one. I'll be looking out for the director when I get there. You can rest assured of that.
Years and years ago in Christchurch, we had Stan Helms directing a session, and he didn't direct very often. And we all came to an agreement that halfway through the session, we'd all put our hand up to say we'd already played the board. So he would think that something had gone out of order.
How horrible people.
And then we had to tell him that it was all right. It was okay. Yeah. Because it was all of us, not him. So he was.
Did he have any hair to pull out?
Very mean. I think that if anybody's mean to you, you deserve it. It's karma.
You don't expect someone to put a card down on the floor or do something, turn it upside down. Or...
John Lawson, years ago, he did a lot of directing in Canterbury and just amazingly good. Somebody on a daytime session. There were feed-ins coming in, and they decided they didn't want them, so they just put them on a table behind them. And that's how, halfway through, the whole thing falls apart. So I stood in front of the room and counted to 10.
And then exploded.
And then, yeah, pretty much.
Yes. Oh, that's okay, well, great.
Thank you, Judge Julie. We'll see you on Sunday. I'm not playing, but I might just sneak in to make sure that nobody's been killed or anything.
All right, well, thank you for that. We'll see you next week.
Yep, and good luck with the director.
Thanks. P.S. We've got the chairperson of Central Region, Julie Bunnell, coming on to talk with us next week. That's it from
That's
us.
All. Bye for now.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring Bridge from beginner to international nationwide.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.